I think that's a good introduction to the question of the day. And in fact, we could probably spend the next couple hours or more talking about it. But my goal is at least to try to figure out what the four of you are doing. We have cases like this one. This is a scenario. We have a younger patient, BRCA germline. We can talk about the fact that this patient also had optimal debulking, normal CA125. So, Rob, the question is, what do you do with a patient like that? And it looks like the most common answer in the investigators is simply solo one. But interestingly, there are a bunch of people, even with optimal debulking, who would try to bring in Paola. So, Rob, yeah. What are your thoughts about this case?
Yeah, I think I answered this at the top line, following solo one. You know, if you look at we might be able to talk about this later, but we actually, they try to get patient level data to look at the difference between the PALA1 data and SOLO1 data for the BRCA patients, this exact analysis. And there is a slight benefit to it. And I shouldn't say that's too strong. The curves are slightly separated. They're not obviously going to be measurable to be different. And I think with the added, effect on patients, taking Bev during chemo and then Bev after chemo for the duration, it does make it a slightly more problematic regimen. I think I chose for at least for the answer because of the optimal patient population that I just the solo one data.
You actually answered the second one, incidentally, but that's okay. No. Really leads into the question that Rob and I were debating. The reason he sent me these two papers, and let me go to you, Joyce. The question I had for Rob is, because one of the things you hear from docs in practice is, okay, it's fine to see all these, evidence-based data. But when you have a woman who comes in who's got three small kids and says, I want everything, every day, everything you do, does that kind of change your approach? And the question I had for him, Joyce, was even in the lower risk, which is not that low, it looks like to me, but even in the lower risk situation of optimal debulking, do you think there's a benefit of giving Bev, Joyce?
So I think you asked me that as well, and I said no. I said it's not going to help women live longer based upon everything we know. But I did want to say that I answered this question differently, and I said other, because I would give this woman IPIV chemo.
No, yeah. I know. That was the next thing I was going to ask you.
Of IP.
Just to open up that other door, I would give this woman IPIV.
I saw it right there. You're the only one out of the 25 who gave that answer, but I'm sure we could have found a couple other people. Just out of curiosity, I'm guessing you're not doing that right this moment?
We're not able to do this right this moment, but especially because she's got a BRCA mutation. I mean, the data for IPIV and BRCA mutation, granted, they're not randomized trials. Some of the women with BRCA mutations have really profound responses with IP chemo, which totally makes sense.
Which is interesting,
right? If you have a really platinum-sensitive tumor and you're giving really high doses of platinum, I think if you're going to choose something that's going to help somebody's survival, IPIV is what I would choose over Bev.
So, Stephanie, the patient comes to you for a second opinion and says, Dr. Arlou suggesting IPIV therapy. You think that's a good idea?
I will not go to the high-pec discussion either. because there's a lot of discussion regarding high-pec as well, because specifically for the patient who has this homologous repair deficiency, there's the high dose maybe of platinum, but maybe the heat as well. And we don't know how the heat may also impact. But in terms of the specific question regarding bevacizumab, I think I agree. If a patient is BRCA mutated with a complete debulking surgery and going to the R0, really, as we say, I think I will go with the solo one data because this plateau that we have seen with olaparib maintenance treatment, I think it's probably the choice that I will advise as well.
So, Katie, I want you to take the next scenario. Before we get off this one, though, I want you to comment on the fact that there are only a couple people, investigators, who said niraparib from BRCA germline. And a lot of times when you ask people, they'll say, it really is an equivalent choice. I'm just more used to using it. I've been used. Is there any sort of scientific basis to choose between the two in this situation of BRCA germline, Katie?
I really don't think so. In the setting of BRCA germline, I think that you should use the PARP that you're most comfortable managing for your patient. There's people that are very comfortable with niraparib because they've been involved in a lot of the clinical trials, and there's people that have just been using olaparib. So for that population, I can't think of a like bio or a pharmacokinetic reason why one would be superior to another.
So let's go on to the next scenario. So BRCA germline, Katie, now much higher risk because of suboptimal bulking, elevated CA125. And it looks like it's very interesting in terms of the investigators. There's a real movement now with this higher risk towards Bev. But it's interesting, there's six people who use just the Bev during chemotherapy and don't continue with olaparib. So Katie, how do you think this one through?
Well, I don't think anyone is wrong, to be perfectly honest. Right. So I am, as long as you're using a PARP, you're wrong if you're not using a PARP, but otherwise you're okay. So the SOLO-1 study did not allow prior bevacizumab. And so when a provider would think that bevacizumab appropriately was the right choice for their patient, and then they would discover through the cycles of 1 through 6 that they had a BRCA mutation, either germline or somatic, they were faced with this decision to stop, which isn't how bevacizumab was approved. The benefit is with and to follow. So you're kind of truncating your benefit of bevacizumab, but the benefit of olaparib is so much higher, they would stop, which I don't think is wrong. You know, if someone wants to stop and get rid of the toxicity of bevacizumab in a patient who has responded very well, I think that that's completely appropriate. The nice thing about Paola is that it gives you the option to continue and just layer on the olaparib. So in a patient that still has a partial response, or just because, you know, you want to use bevacizumab because that's what you're comfortable with, now you can add on olaparib for the same amount of time as SOLO-1. And in that study in BRCA-associated cancers, the magnitude of benefit was, you know, 0.67. I mean, it was 67% reduction in the hazard or risk of progression or death. Huge. So, I think you can individualize to your patient now. Whereas before you were kind of driven by how the study was designed, which was necessary for the era, but didn't really reflect practice necessarily.
So here's the way the docs in practice answered very similarly. And also there's a cohort. Also, we saw this in the past. I can remember seeing this where people use Bev only during the chemotherapy, even before Paola came out, but, you know, kind of generally similar to what investigators are doing. So we also want to get into the issue of sort of the other end of the spectrum in terms of patients, both optimal and suboptimal debulking, but those who have other genomic profiles. So we asked Stephanie about patients with somatic BRCA. So in this situation, it was suboptimal debulking like we just talked about, and you really kind of see the same approach to treatment with the somatic BRCA as you do with germline BRCA. Again, Stephanie, is that your practice in general, somatic BRCA? You approach them the exact same way?
Yeah. I think for the somatic BRCA, yes, I approach the same way. And as Katie just said, like when we talk about maintenance treatment, I think it's very important because there's a continuous maintenance for bevacizumab, which is we start with chemo and then we maintain, and which is very different for the PARP inhibitor treatment. It's a switch maintenance, so it's a very different approach. So if we think that a patient needs bevacizumab, I think it's reasonable to, and in this specific case with a somatic BRCA mutation and suboptimal, to have starting bevacizumab, and then as we discussed, to, you know, adapt according to each patient, and definitely for a somatic BRCA mutation, having a PARP maintenance treatment is definitely appropriate and needed.